At the request of the Russian government, the United Nations Security Council holds an emergency meeting later today to discuss a recent series of terrorist attacks in Russia. Last week, 90 people died when bombs destroyed two airliners in flight. Yesterday, a suicide bomber killed herself and nine others in a crowd outside a subway station in Moscow. Then today, on the first day of school in Russia, more than a dozen heavily armed terrorists stormed a middle school in southern Russia, not far from the border with Chechnya. As many as 8 people are reported dead. About 400 are being held hostage. Half those are reported to be children. Russian security forces have the building surrounded and say they have established contact with the gunman. All of these incidents are being blamed on Chechen rebels or their supporters. Later in the program, we'll go to New York to talk about the Republican National Convention with NPR's political editor, Ken Rudin, and to hear about protests and arrests outside of Madison Square Garden. But first, an update on the school standoff. If you have questions about the events that have unfolded in Russia over the past week and more, or about U.S. policy on Russia and Chechnya, if you've lived and worked in the region, give us a phone call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from Moscow is Susan Glasser, a Washington Post foreign correspondent. It's good of you to be with us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Can you tell us what's going on, as far as we know, down there around that school in southern Russia?
Well, unfortunately, there has really settled into what appears to be a pretty tense standoff over the last few hours. It's already been since 9 a.m. this morning that the school was seized. It's about 11 o'clock at night here already. And, you know, there's really not a lot of serious progress that seems to have been made. That they haven't allowed in food and drink even for the children, as far as we understand. You know, not sure that serious negotiations have yet taken place.
Have any demands been made, as far as we know?
Well, there's conflicting reports on that, but President Putin's top advisor for Chechnya said a few hours ago that, yes, in fact, they had demanded an immediate pullout of Russian troops from Chechnya and the release of a number of guerrillas who were arrested after an armed raid this summer in another region of southern Russia.
The suspicion is that these are Chechen rebels or their supporters. Is that all we know?
Yeah, and in fact, the authorities have been extremely reluctant in releasing information. There have not really been any live pictures whatsoever from the scene. You know, we have very little information at this point. They haven't publicly said who is in there. It's certainly believed to be Chechen separatists and, you know, potentially some of their supporters.
The tactic of seizing large numbers of people as hostages has been used before.
Yes, that's right. Unfortunately, today's events are a real echo for people all around Russia of two previous horrific mass hostage takings just 2 years ago. As I'm sure you remember, here in Moscow, a crowded theater with as many as 900 people was seized by armed Chechen guerrillas, and after a 57-hour standoff, the government stormed the theater, and 129 hostages were killed, mostly as a result of the knockout gas used by the government in storming the theater. And there have been earlier mass hostage takings as well that have resulted in massive casualties. So unfortunately, the precedent is very bad here.
And this all comes after, what, the suicide bombing yesterday in Moscow and the destruction of those two airliners last week?
Well, that's exactly right. It's been an extraordinarily violent and terror-filled week here. The two planes that were brought down almost simultaneously, apparently in attacks blamed on two Chechen women, were, you know, really the first major seizure of an airplane since September 11th in the United States, and certainly was an unprecedented attack for Russia.
The other event that took place was an election in Chechnya.
That's correct, which almost seems beside the point in many ways now, or, you know, irrelevant. This was an election on Sunday to determine the new president of the Chechen Republic, and it was necessary to have this election because a previous pro-Kremlin president had been assassinated in May, but it really wasn't much of an election as you would understand it. It was just really one credible candidate handpicked by the Kremlin who won, and, you know, the government claimed there was a turnout of more than 80%, although reporters on the scene said the streets were empty, as were the polling places. So, you know, it's not a very credible election, and I'm not sure what it means in terms of these current events.
Chechnya has been battling Russian forces on and off almost since the collapse of the Soviet Union. Is there any indication that the region is any closer today to coming back to some sort of resolution?
Well, I think, you know, President Putin often talks about his policy of, you know, normalization in Chechnya, but there's little evidence really to suggest that. This is a war that is continuing. It's clearly continuing by unconventional means, and it's being carried out, you know, throughout Russia and not just inside the republic by means of guerrilla attacks and separatist attacks. And, you know, the Russian military largely has pacified, you know, the region of Chechnya itself by day, but clearly they have not eliminated or dispersed the guerrilla movement.
And what's been President Putin's response? We know that Russia has asked for this meeting of the United Nations Security Council. That unusual in itself.
Very unusual. I mean, you know, as you know, there have been, you know, a long series of terror attacks inside Russia that have never provoked such a response by Putin. He seems very insistent on linking this current wave of attacks to international terrorism, to groups linked to al-Qaeda, although the actual executors of the attacks seem to have been Chechens. President Putin hasn't spoken since the school was seized, but literally minutes before, maybe even at the same time, he did speak this morning about the other terror attacks, and he vowed never to negotiate with terrorists. He blamed it on al-Qaeda, and he said, "We shall fight against them, throw them in prisons, and destroy them." And then he flew back here to Moscow from his vacation after he heard about the school.
And Susan Glasser, thanks very much. We know what it's like there. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Susan Glasser is a Washington Post foreign correspondent, and she was with us by phone from her office in Moscow. We'll talk now with Dmitry Trenin. He's director of studies at the Moscow Carnegie Center, co-chair of the program on foreign and security policy. He's with us by phone from Moscow as well. Thanks very much. Same thing. We know it's late. We appreciate it.
Good morning.
What do you make of this latest wave of violence? Is this, do you think, connected to the timing of the election?
Well, I think it definitely is. I would interpret what's been happening as a terrorist offensive against Russia's policies, Putin himself, and I would say the Russian people.
What does it say about the success of Putin's strategy? He came to power vowing to crush the rebellion.
Well, I think it says a lot about the ability of the Russian state to protect its citizens against terrorist attacks. I think that what we've seen amounts to major deficiencies in such areas as intelligence gathering, counterintelligence, protection of key targets, airport security, and things like that.
And give us a brief précis, if you will, those of us who do not follow this this news on a regular basis. Chechnya, at one point after a Russian offensive, seemed to have achieved a degree of autonomy.
Well, there was a period after the first Chechen campaign, which lasted from 1994 through 1996, that Chechnya virtually became independent. That lasted for 3 years, and that led to the degeneration of the separatist movement, the radicalization, widespread radicalization of Chechen society, chaos, lack of governance, and the popularly elected president Maskarov eventually was unable to control the place. And 1999 saw the raid by invasion, rather, by extremist Chechen leader Shamil Basayev into the neighboring Republic of Dagestan, which provoked Russia into a second Chechen campaign, which crushed Chechen separatist independence, but which made Chechnya safe for terrorists. Chechnya, in effect, Russia. So having won on the battlefield, the Russians have turned their enemy into, say, terrorists, because when you're the weaker party, that's the kind of weapon that you're using in asymmetric warfare.
Let's get some callers involved in the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Arturo joins us from Lawrence, Kansas.
Hi, love the show. I'm a delivery driver in Lawrence, and I followed the story when the Opera House was taken a few years back, and I was wondering what options does the security forces in Russia have to end this dispute peacefully, as opposed to the precedent they set, where they storm in and a lot of people get injured. Because I guess this is a really different matter when you have a lot of young children involved in the situation. And I'll take my question off air.
Hey, Arturo, thanks very much. Dmitry Trenin?
Well, this is precisely what's now on the minds of President Putin, his senior officials, and the Russian security forces. True. In 2002, there was a major hostage taking, 800 people at a Moscow theater, and it ended in a disaster. The commando operation was brilliantly performed, but the gas that the storm brigade, if you like, used incapacitated not just the terrorists, but a lot of their hostages. And there was no coordination during the operation between the commandos and the medical people, and antidotes were not available and things like that. So it resulted in 129 deaths. That was a disaster. I think that Putin has to do anything and everything to avert a similar disaster this time. So do anything to save the lives of the children, but he will not give in to the demands of the hostage takers. He can't.
What is the response? I think it's probably too early to gauge the response to this most recent incident, but after these two attacks over the past week or so, and, this long-running war that continues to grind on, what do the Russian people feel about Chechnya?
Well, it's interesting. I think America is at war, and it largely feels at war. Europe is not at war, doesn't feel it's at war. Russia has been at war for the past 5 years, since the start of the second Chechen campaign. And yet, the bulk of the Russian population did not feel that they are at war. I think that the message that these attacks are sending to many Russians is that they are at war, like it or not. The Russians have been able to get over things and move ahead, because there are too many things that if you start thinking about them, they would simply block you from moving on with your life. But this has been unprecedented, a series of attacks. So I think that many Russians will feel somewhat different. They will feel that they are being attacked, that they are being targeted, and That I think will be the feeling of most people. Also, there will be, I think, and that's the sad part of it, a rise in ethnic tension. Many people of Caucasian Chechen, not only Chechen, but Caucasian origin, Caucasian meaning from the Caucasus, will be seen as potential suspects.
And Muslims as well?
Well, yes. Well, call them Muslims, yes. I think that's the danger. The danger of the country society being split into Slavs and non-Slavs, Slavs and Muslims.
We're talking with Dmitry Trenin, the Director of Studies at the Moscow Carnegie Center. More of your calls after a short break. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Again, an estimated 400 people, half of them believed to be children, are being held hostage by gunmen in a school in southern Russia. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the series of terrorist attacks and the conflict between Russia and Chechen rebels. Our guest is Dmitry Trenin, Director of Studies at the Moscow Carnegie Center. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Matt. Matt's with us from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Hi. I had a question regarding the root cause of the conflict. And the Chechens are looking for independence, but what's their main argument against what Russia has been doing?
Well, I think that it's a very good question, but I don't think you can have a simple answer to that question. It was fairly straightforward back in 1991, 1994, when Chechnya was de facto independent before the first war, and then when Chechnya was Chechen independence was tolerated by Russia between the first and the second wars. At that time, you could talk about Chechnya in terms of separatism and Russia's attempt to hold on to that piece of the Russian Federation. I think that since then we've seen a degeneration of the situation in Chechnya. You do have a group of people who stick with the original idea of independence, say Chechen President Aslan Maskhadov is one of those people. His Foreign Minister Ilyas Akhmadov. Those people who are relatively more moderate within those in opposition to Russia. But then there are others. Then there are people who are beyond independence, who are part of the larger network of radicals.
Matt, you're trying to get... Go ahead, Matt.
I'm sorry. Would you say a majority of Chechens are for independence?
The majority of Chechens want to be left alone, quite frankly. They want to be given a little bit of security, a little bit of economic opportunity to survive. I think that a lot of Chechens are simply apathetic. They're deeply apathetic about anything. It's a very sad story.
Matt, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Dmitry Trenin, up until now, Russia has always insisted that Chechnya is an internal matter. What's the significance of the request for a meeting at the UN Security Council?
Well, I think it's very important for President Putin to push the international community to recognizing Chechnya as part of the global war on terror. And he wants... the Security Council to look into the recent terrorist attacks on Russia and essentially go beyond expressing sympathy for the Russian people, but toward in the direction of recognizing Chechnya as part of the international struggle against terror. Otherwise, the Chechnya will be seen as a thing apart, as a dirty war, the colonial war. Russia is waging against Chechen separatists, against aspirations of those who want to be Chechnya to become independent.
Dmitry Trenin, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And good night to you. Dmitry Trenin, Director of Studies at the Moscow Carnegie Center, co-chair of the program on foreign and security policy. He was with us by phone from Moscow. And Sarah Mendelson joins us now, senior fellow in the Russia and Eurasia program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. She's here in Washington, D.C. at her office. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Neil.
What is this war has been going on a long time. How has U.S. policy changed? I guess the pivotal moment is 9/11.
I have to say, what U.S. policy? Before September 11th, there was not much, and after September 11th, there was even less. So it's been a very difficult issue, I think, for administrations, both the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, about how to deal with this and what level of importance to put it at. On the one hand, the ongoing war in Chechnya has had a disastrous effect on development inside of Russia. But U.S. policymakers have for a long time been very uneasy about how to address it, even before September 11th.
So what Dmitry was just talking about, that idea of it as a dirty little colonial war, that seemed to be the impression, a bigger impression before 9/11, but bigger fish to fry?
Well, I should say that, in fact, not surprisingly, inside the U.S. government, my sense of talking to people inside the U.S. government is that there are different opinions. The official approach has been to, of course, object to what's going on. But below the level of the National Security Advisor, below the level of the president, at a more working level, there have been a lot of people who've been very upset about the lack of response that the U.S. and the Bush administration have had on this issue, because the very way in which the authorities have used force has led many people to conclude it has bred extremism rather than contained it. And so for a long time, it's been a worry. And even if you weren't working on terrorism per se, if you were looking at democracy and human rights issues, I think there are many people inside the U.S. government who've been very concerned. There's been too much silence on the part of the Bush administration, but also in Europe, also in London and Berlin and Paris. This has not been a focus for anybody.
And at this point, how is the United States likely to respond to today's U.N. Security Council meeting?
This is really such a dramatic moment. It's hard for people who don't track this closely to understand. There's so many of us who've been wanting to see some kind of discussion in the UN or in other multilateral organizations in Europe, Council of Europe, for example, the OSCE. There is a real worry, though, that the Russian Federation will use this platform, this very important platform, to shape the issue in a way that really doesn't do justice to what's going on. I mean, on the one hand, clearly there is terrorism. And I have to say, it is just, you know, it's horrific to think of all these kids on the first day of school being held. I mean, it's a nightmare. Watching these planes go, you know, the aftermath of the planes being taken out of the sky, it's terrifying. And I say this as somebody who's supposed to travel to Russia next week. But the Russian government has had a hand in this, and the degree to which other members of the Security Council are going to be willing to address that, I'm just not sure. And it's very worrisome. I mean, if the Putin administration turns the Security Council into a forum to justify what they've done, that'll be very worrying. On the other hand, I think everybody can expect that the Russian government is going to strike back in some way. What's interesting is that the Russian population, we do a lot of surveys. I've done these with a colleague, Ted Gerber, at the University of Wisconsin, and with a polling company, the Levada Analytics Center in Moscow. Since 2001, we've been following very closely how the Russian population thinks about the war in Chechnya. And I think it's important for those in the UN and for the Bush administration, as well as the Kremlin, to have a better bead on how people understand this, because I think there is more willingness to come up with some kind of negotiated, mediated, or withdrawal strategy.
Let's get another caller in. Jim joins us from Canton, Ohio.
Oh, yes. I'd like to know if anyone knows of a connection between the Chechen terrorists and al-Qaeda as part of a global conspiracy to commit Islamic fundamentalist terrorism. And also, I want to know why, you know, when NPR describes these acts in general, like All Things Considered, shows like that, they never describe the Chechens as terrorists. They always call them Chechen rebels, Chechen separatists, Chechen gunmen, things like that. But never Chechen terrorists. And why is that? I mean, are we supporting that? Is the United States government supporting the Chechens like we did the Kosovar Liberation Army?
Well, you'd have to ask about the United States government to somebody who knows more about it than I do. Speaking for NPR, the attacks are being described as terrorist attacks. So terrorist attacks are carried out by terrorists, Jim. But his other question on al-Qaeda, Sarah Mendelson, the cause of the Chechens has certainly been embraced in pronouncements by al-Qaeda and its allies.
They have. Let me just say one thing. You know, it's worrisome, though, that I'm sure the U.S. government or certainly there's no evidence the U.S. government is supporting any kind of terrorists, Chechen terrorists, otherwise. But what's really upsetting is that efforts to get humanitarian aid or to support human rights groups have not been as forthcoming as they probably should have been. So, you know, it's not only are we not supporting the rebels, we're not supporting those who are really interested in peace. I think that there are some, again, inside the U.S. government who would like to do some work on the humanitarian front. In terms of al-Qaeda, you know, the Putin administration has said this many times, and there have been some indications. It's very hard to say for sure, although, you know, if you were a jihadist and you saw this going on, there might be a reason why you'd support it. I mean, I think it's not unreasonable for people to conclude that there is at least a danger that this would happen. It is not clear that various suicide bombings that have happened in other parts of Russia, the plane that the crash of the planes last week, or this, are in fact al-Qaeda. I mean, the problem is, and the caller alludes to this, there are many different people who are unhappy inside of Chechnya. Some of them are clearly terrorists. But some of the terrorists may be driven by different kinds of motivations. There may be some that have some connection to al-Qaeda, but there may be people who are driven to terrorism because they've lost their family. They have nothing else to live for. And that's the fear that we have, is that you're going to see a rash of, for example, women with suicide, you know, suicide bombers.
These are the so-called black widows.
Yeah. I mean, this is terrifying.
These are women who, at least according to what we read, have lost either their husbands or other close relatives and have now decided to take action.
Yeah, and I have to say I'm so uncomfortable with what I see as this bizarre kind of cycle of events where there'll be a terrorist action and then media will cover it. And then usually there's a lull. And usually that lull goes on for weeks, sometimes months, and then nobody is talking about Chechnya. Although I receive, and many of my colleagues receive, emails, reports daily, weekly from people on the ground reporting disappearances, acts of terror locally. And so I worry that we're in this cycle where there's an event, then the media covers it, and, you know, if you're a terrorist, you couldn't help but notice that it's drawing more attention. And so I guess the hope is that this then goes out of the realm of just this kind of cycle, and that those in the international community and the Bush administration and other in European capitals that can address this from a policy perspective do so, and they don't walk away from it.
We're talking about the situation in southern Russia. 400 people are being held hostage at a school. This is the first day of school in Russia. Armed gunmen seized the institution early this morning. Some negotiations have gone on, though apparently they have been broken off. Our guest is Sarah Mendelson, a senior fellow in the Russia and Eurasia program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Abdi joins us from Minneapolis.
Hello, Neil. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
My question is I'm going to keep it very small and simple. I mean, why, after the breakup of the Soviet Union, is Russia still holding on to Chechnya, as a matter of fact, when they let go all other former Soviet states? I mean, what I'm saying is, what is the importance of holding on to Chechnya? Why can't they let it go and become a full independent? Is it because they are a Muslim state? Is that the reason? Because I'm hearing all of this suicide bombing in Israel and Russia, and because if Israel is let go, all the Palestinians become their own homeland, they wouldn't have a suicide bomber. So can you address those two questions, please?
Well, as a predicate, obviously, Chechnya is not the only part, the only province or area that's being that is part of the Russian Federation. There are many others. But go ahead, Sarah Mendelson.
It's complicated. I mean, on the one hand, I think that Dmitry Trenin was correct that a lot of people have moved away from this issue of independence. I actually don't think that that's what's really going on here. I think that there is a cycle of violence that has really helped institutionalize corruption on the ground. There is enormous amounts of difficulty in bringing this to an end, in finding some kind of solution. I mean, I think we are obviously at a crisis. We are obviously at a point where the Putin administration's efforts to, quote, normalize this have failed. And what to do next is something that I think should be considered by members of the international community. But I think that it's not as much about independence as some of these other cases, and I really do think that people on the ground generally want to lead normal lives. So the question is, what is keeping us from getting to a more normal situation, a situation where we're not seeing this?
And it's America.
It's America.
Yeah, sorry. Is the United States and the United Nations, for that matter, ready to monitor free and fair elections in Chechnya or like the East Timor, you know, to determine their own destiny?
Well, I think, I don't know if it's up to the United States, but I think that there are certainly organizations that should be and that would be willing to monitor a situation. But the bottom line is, and as I think Sunday showed, there are not the conditions in Chechnya for an election. And the, quote, election that occurred was fraudulent. And, by and large, when you have an ongoing conflict, these are not the conditions for people to be able to go to the polls and vote. And I mean, I think what we have is we need to have some kind of serious consideration of how we move forward. You know, maybe we need to have a senior diplomat who is tasked with pursuing this in Europe, pursuing this with the Russians. Maybe there's a European diplomat who this is their job. I mean, what's worrying about this is it's not as if there's a group of people who are sitting around and thinking about nothing but how to get out of this quagmire. And there are many other regions of the world where people are doing that.
Abdi, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you very much, Neil. Can I end with this?
If you keep it very short, yes.
Absolutely, I will. I think we would have less hostage taking, less suicide bombing, and perhaps maybe a full security in mind for the Russian people if indeed they come to a conclusion that this is the time to let it go, this is the time for Chechnya to become an independent state. And the same case goes for the Israeli government to let the Palestinians become their own people and rule their own nation so that there will be less suicide bombings in Israel as well.
Abdi, thank you for the phone call.
Can I just add one thing, which is that the Putin administration, I mean, actually in Putin's biography, which I think is called something like the Astonishingly Frank
We just have a very few seconds left, I'm afraid.
Putin, he was worried that this drive for independence, which originally started some of this, would spread to other parts of Russia. So I think his worry was the integrity of the Russian nation.
Sarah Mendelson, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Sarah Mendelson, Senior Fellow in the Russian and Eurasia Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. She joined us from her office here in Washington, D.C. We'll go to New York, the Republican National Convention, and to the protests and arrests outside the convention when we come back from a break. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation, NPR News.